Many of you are probably familiar with the story of Helmut Hubner. He's the young German teenager that was executed by Adolf Hitler for treason. It's a wonderful story, and BYU actually turned it into a play in the 1970s. However, church leaders were upset by the play and decided to suppress it. Why was that? Dr. David Conley Nelson details, as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story. This is the story about Hubner you probably haven't heard. Check out our conversation. I also want to remind you that this is the end of the year, and we're going to have a special year-end special. I'd love to have you email me at gospeltangents@gmail.com, or you can also click on this link to a survey to tell us what your favorite interviews were and what were the coolest things you learned over the past year at Gospel Tangents. So please fill out our survey. We'll include your comments in our next episode for a year-end special. Now back to our conversation. You kind of mentioned a little bit about Helmut Hubner.
Okay.
To me, the interesting, and I think you kind of summarized it pretty well. The interesting part in your book to me was kind of the church reaction to the play about his life and some of the strange personal interactions after that came. Because I think that's not something, you know, some people might be familiar with Helmut Hubner, but to me, the more interesting start was what happened here in America.
Yeah, well, that is what I call a collective memory. We formed a different collective memory. Okay, so here's what's going on. There are about 4,200 missionaries that between 1947 and 1962, not missionaries, excuse me, 4,200 German Mormons who moved to the United States between 1947 and 1962. We quit counting at 62 because the church quit counting, at least on a certain form that it was used. So a lot of a lot of Germans come over here, and in the process, they miss what's going on in Germany back at the time in the 60s, which was known as the Wirtschaftswunder, the German economic miracle. When Germany recovered from World War II and started, you know, exporting cars to the United States and everything. So during this time, at the same time in 1962, in the early 60s, there's a German teenager, actually, he's about 17 years old, named Ulrich Zander, and he is doing research for a high school term paper on German atrocities during the Second World War, only 15 years after it, including those that happened in the Wehrmacht rather than the SS. He comes across the story of a young man by the name of Helmut Hubner, who was an honor student, a really bright kid in Hamburg, and I've talked about him. And as I said, he monitored the BBC German language newspaper broadcast, and he put out seditious tracts because he hated Hitler. He saw through a lot of the propaganda. Well, we told what happened to him. He was arrested and guillotined, and his two cohorts got imprisoned. So Ulrich Zander comes across the story of Helmut Hubner and starts writing him, writing newspaper stories. He's doing so well that he gets a job with a German newspaper, starts writing stories, I believe, and he's in Hamburg. And the German novelist Günter Grass picks up on these stories. And in Günter Grass's novels, a couple different novels and a play or two, he cast a Helmut Hubner type, brave young man as a character, because a courageous young German who resisted. As Günter Grass wrote a lot about the German collective guilt for the war and the things that happened, and the Germans who did bad things and the Germans who did good things during the war. Well, at Brigham Young University, there's a professor of German, a Princeton PhD graduate, named Alan Keel. One of Alan Keel's research areas is the literature of Günter Grass. So Keel learns about Helmut Huberner through these novels written by Günter Grass and traces it back to Ulrich Zander, the German teenager in the 1960s who has done research on him. So Keel wants to write about the story and do academic research on Helmut Huberner. He goes and grabs a historian, because he knows he's not a historian, so he grabs a historian, Douglas Tobler, out of the history department. And then they're having these faculty confabs, these interdisciplinary faculty meetings. And in comes a third character, a third BYU professor named Thomas Rogers. Thomas Rogers is a professor of Russian at BYU, Syracuse PhD. But his passion is writing theatrical plays. And he has already written a few plays that are performed at the Margetts Theater and there at BYU. So Alan Keel tells him, you know, Tom, what you really ought to do is we're going to research this guy and we'll give you the facts. What you ought to really do to publicize this is you ought to write a play on Helmut Huberner. And we ought to run that, you know. And so Rogers is all ears. So he writes the play Huberner, spelled the English way, H-U-E-B-E-N-E-R, no umlaut over the U. It's 1976, and Huberner Against the Reich opens at the Little Margetts Theater. There's two theaters at BYU. There's the Pardoe Theater, which is the big, grandiose one, and then there's a little bandbox theater called the Margetts Theater, which is really a laboratory for drama students. Understand, I had a daughter that went there and majored in dance, and BYU has a pretty good performing arts department. So they cast BYU students as Helmut Huberner, his wife, his brother, I'm not his wife, excuse me, his mother, his brother, his evil stepfather, who was a brown-shirted corporal. And they do a story about this kid who is so brave and so principled, yet so unfortunate and so tragically executed. Well, this thing hits the top of the charts, at least the top of the charts in Utah. Okay, they have to extend the performance for a week or two because the place is sold out. There are lines at the BYU ticket office. I don't know where you buy tickets at BYU, but the line, and they described in one account as long serpentine lines to get in and see this play about this Mormon hero. This is this righteous young man, you know, that was killed by Hitler and his people. Newspapers pick it up. Tribune picks it up, Deseret News picks it up, Provo Herald, Southern Utah newspapers and all that. And some BYU alumni, rich alumni, hear about this. And they say, this is great. We just can't let it end here. We can't let this end here. These kids are being treated, too. The performers at BYU, they're like athletes. All of a sudden, they're like the basketball players. You know, people are coming up to him. You played Huberner's mother, you know? Margaret Blair Young played Huberner's mother.
Yeah.
And
she was actually my first interview. We talked about Jane Manning James. I should talk to her about this.
Well, you should do that. Well, anyway, so these BYU alumni out in California, they say, we need to bring this play on the road. We need to do an old-fashioned Mormon road show. And we need to schedule this not only in stakes, but we need to schedule this in community playhouses. We need to put out the word that the Mormon Church had a brave young man who fought against Hitler. We need to do this. If we're not doing for the church what we need to do, right? Okay. Well, not everybody's happy about this play. There are some people that are really, really unhappy about it. Remember I mentioned there are 4,200 German immigrants that came over? A lot of these people were in the Wehrmacht. Some of them were members of the Nazi Party. Some of them were brown shirts. Some of them were black shirts. Many were all Mormons.
What's a black shirt?
The SS.
Oh, okay.
SS, concentration camp guards. And that those who, the guards and those who ran the gas chambers and crematorium. Mm. So they're very uncomfortable because they came over and they had indoctrinated themselves over the years that they did what the Lord told them to do to support the 12th article of faith, and that anybody who didn't support the 12th article of faith was unrighteous. In their estimation, Helmut Hubner was an unrighteous Mormon.
Oh, wow.
And deserved what he got. And this isn't everybody.
Right.
This is a significant number. Okay, so they start complaining up their chain of command. Well, the complaints get to a gentleman named Thomas S. Monson. You've probably heard of him, okay?
Yeah, I think so.
At this time, he's a member of the Quorum of the Twelve. Thomas Monson had great relations with German Americans. He had been, at age 23, he'd been a bishop of a 1,000-member German-American ward.
Oh, wow.
At age 23. That's how
huge.
He became.
That's a thousand?
How he, what?
A thousand?
A thousand.
People? Wow.
A thousand in that ward. And he goes, I'm sure he had help, okay? I'm sure he had help. So he had a lot of deep roots in the German-American community. Lots of genuine affinity for President Monson among the German-Americans, Mormons, and a lot of respect by President Monson for these people, who he thought is very hardworking, salt-of-the-earth people. Thomas S. Monson, the second and the penultimate night of the play, after it's been extended, Thomas S. Monson shows up. Dallin Oaks is the president of BYU at the time. And everybody at BYU is gaga about this. Everybody's so proud of themselves. Karl-Heinz Schnippe and Rudy Voba, the two Hubner companions, have both been down there to see the play. Karl-Heinz Schnippe has been there three times. Mm. And he's joking with the actors about their fake German accents that they're doing. So, anyway, President Monson, Brother Monson, or Elder Monson, he's Quorum of the Twelve at the time. Elder Monson arrives. And he takes into play, and he just doesn't seem to be as happy, according to other witnesses, as the rest of them. The word comes down 2 days later through Dallin Oaks, there will be no more productions of Hubner against the Reich. In fact, Thomas Rogers is prohibited from releasing, or it's his intellectual property, but he is prohibited from giving permission for anybody else to use that play.
Wow.
Furthermore, Alan Keel and Douglas Tobler are asked, in big quotation marks, asked to put a hold on their research and not publish anything. Hmm. A couple things have happened. First off, the German-American community got to Thomas Monson. And they don't like it. They don't like it at all, because Hubner should not be considered a hero. He should be considered, in some of their eyes, an example of how not to behave. There's other things going on at the time. There are 3,700 Germans, German Latter-day Saints, behind the Iron Curtain in East Germany. This was before Nixon's detente. And some behind-the-scenes negotiations are going on so that these members can be allowed to have some privileges, the same privileges as West German missionary members, to be given visas to go to West Germany when a general authority comes over and hears the talk, and other things. And it is President Monson's opinion, apparently, confirmed later in a discussion he had with Rudy Voba, that the church could not take the chance of presenting any Mormon as doing anything other than the 12th Article of Faith. Now, Alan Keel, whose project this is at BYU, and knows a little bit about Germany and German culture, knows that the best thing that the Mormon Church could have done was not to ban the play, or not to ban the research, but to take the play over to Communist East Germany and put it on, because a communist German would never conflate an anti-fascist with an anti-communist. The East Germans already had their own historiography on Helmut Heubner. It said nothing about his religion. They didn't care what his religion was. But they knew that he was a brave German who had resisted. The fact is, and this is my professional opinion, that Thomas Monson got it wrong because he didn't know enough about German culture. He was the real great knowledgeable guy of German-American Mormons, but he did not realize that it was not in the church's best. If he thought it was in the church's best interest not to suppress Heubner, he was just diametrically wrong. It would have been in the church's best interest to promote Heubner. And another thing that some viewers are probably saying right now, but the temple, the Freiburg temple. The church did not enter into any kind of negotiations about the Freiburg temple, not even make a proposal until 1978. This was happening in 1976. In fact, it was the East German authorities who got tired of the church people asking for special visas all the time, and who saw the potential of hard U.S. money, dollars coming over and being spent there, that suggested that the church open a temple behind the Iron Curtain, and the church did do it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the East German government let the construction company tap into the Trans-Siberia pipeline for energy in order to get that temple built.
Mm.
So, what is going on now, and for the remainder of Dallin Oaks' tenure as BYU president, 76 to 1980. In 1980, he steps down at BYU, and he becomes Chief Justice of the Utah Supreme Court. That was the signal that caused Alan Keel and Douglas Tobler to write a Sunstone article and publish it with Sunstone magazine on Helmut Heubner. And the believe the title was something about the elephant in the room. And it was a kind of a surreptitious title. You had to know what they were talking about. And they were talking about the fact that Heubner was rebelling not only against Hitler, but Heubner was rebelling against the pro-Nazis in his own branch and district. And it was, I believe the name of the article was The Führer's New Clothes.
Oh.
Doing the Emperor's, mm-hmm. The Emperor's naked analogy. So this goes on, but Thomas Rogers can't put on his play yet. I don't know to the degree to which Professors Keel and Tobler consulted their higher-ups at BYU. I know that Elder Oaks was gone. I don't know to what degree they took a chance in publishing this article, but Thomas Rogers could not let the play go. He still couldn't let the play go. And what started changing all of this was the fact that Schnibbe and Voba, the cohorts of Helmut Heubner, decided to write their own books. Schnibbe wrote a book in concert with Tobler and Keel. Voba wrote a book in cohort with Jerry Borrowman, who I believe was with a different faith-promoting publisher. It was book, maybe it was Bookcraft, or I can't tell you right now. I've lost forgotten that. Mm-hmm. So then it becomes apparent that there's no way you can keep ordinary Mormons who are not employed at BYU from telling their stories. So gradually the story keeps coming out and coming out. And then the fiction writers come in and start the start writing on Helmut Huberner. Come 1992, after the Berlin Wall fell in 89, and the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991, BYU rehabilitates his Thomas Rogers play and puts it on at the big, flashy theatrical arena. Not the Margetts Theater, but the Pardoe Theater. They let Thomas Rogers have a minor acting part in the play. And all of a sudden, it is now okay to talk about Helmut Huberner, because East Germany is no longer a communist state. Now, I can tell you that if you're going to spend some money, exercising 20/20 hindsight again, but if you're going to spend a lot of the church's tithing money in order to hire really high dollar and quite qualified professors at BYU, and they give you a professional opinion, you might want to at least consider that professional opinion, because they've got some pretty smart guys on the faculty there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's basically what happened, is the real stuff got suppressed. And because of the Huberner play, there seems to be a collective memory among Mormons now that all Mormons were persecuted in Nazi Germany, and they were not. They were not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, great. Well, David, I really appreciate all the time you spent here today. So do you have any final words on the book, or, you know, whatever?
Well, you know, I guess if you don't mind some shameless self-promotion, it's the University of Oklahoma Press, David Conley Nelson, Moroni and the Swastika, Mormons in Nazi Germany. It's on all the normal places that you would get, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. And I have a website, www.davidconleynelson.com. If you read the book and you like it, you read the book, you don't like it, get in touch with me. I answer all my mail. Uh-huh. And and thank you very much. I appreciate inviting me to be on your podcast. I know this is a lot of work for you.
Yeah, well, I appreciate getting together. And this has actually been a few months in coming, so it's nice that you made it out here to Utah, so that was great. So
well, thanks for having me.
All right. Well, once again, thanks for participating on Gospel Tangents, and look forward to seeing you around again.
All right.
Thanks. I'd like to thank Dr. David Conley Nelson for spending so much time talking to us about the German LDS Church. It was a wonderful conversation, and I hope you learned a lot. I know I did. Since it's the end of the year, I just want to point out that I'd love to hear your comments about your favorite interviews at Gospel Tangents. Our next episode will be our year-end special, and we'll highlight some of the interesting things to me, but I'd also like to hear what your interesting things were and include it in our next post and podcast. So please, also, if you'd like to record a special message, please send me a voicemail or just record something on your phone and email it to me. I'd love to have that in our next conversation. So thanks again for listening, and I hope you have a great new year. Also, don't forget to subscribe on this little button, or you can buy a transcript here or check out some of our other videos here at Gospel Tangents. Thanks again for listening, and happy new year.